You are listening to an InsightView.eu podcast. In this podcast, InsightView has asked Camilla Noerup Sorensen, who is an associate professor at the Institute for Strategy at the Royal Danish Defence College in Copenhagen, about the global ramifications of what commentators describe as Western powers' humiliating exit from Afghanistan. InsightView asks Camilla about the global and regional consequences of the White House running away with its tail between its legs. We also discuss whether the United States leaving Afghanistan makes room for China, and whether Beijing is interested in getting into what many historians call the graveyard of empires.
First, Camilla Noerup Sorensen, thank you once again for taking time for this InsightView podcast about the global ramifications of what commentators describe as Western powers' humiliating exit from Afghanistan. The United States and its allies are now pulling troops out of Afghanistan, which makes leeway for China to gain influence. Before we discuss China's role in Afghanistan, maybe you could recapitulate the situation. Is the Taliban entirely in control of the country?
Well, apart from a small area in the Pashir province, it seems to be the case. The Taliban has taken over Afghanistan. They control all key cities, including Kabul, the capital. The key question, I think, is whether there is one centrally controlled Taliban, whether the different groups of Taliban that are now controlling different parts of Afghanistan, whether they are all controlled or listening to the political top of the movement of the Taliban, and that is the people around Mullah Abdullah Ghani Barah, who's until now still sitting in Doha in Qatar. It's difficult to judge really whether there is this centrally controlled Taliban. But what we know about Taliban and what we know about Afghanistan in general is that it is a challenge in this difficult, inaccessible, poor country with the many different tribes and local leaders, etc., to have one centrally controlled leadership, whether it's the Afghan government or other groups that have tried to be in control in Afghanistan, including the Western powers, been in control in Afghanistan, including the Western powers, it's a challenge, right? Because Afghanistan is very difficult to govern from one centrally central place, one central control. And that also goes for the Taliban. And there seems to be different factions in the Taliban. But all this, I think we will get a clearer picture of in the coming weeks and months only.
When it comes to opposition, there's a lot of talk about Ahmad Massoud, who is the son of Afghanistan's anti-Soviet resistance hero, Ahmad Shah Massoud, who was murdered by the Al-Qaeda militants shortly before the terror attack in New York on September 11, 2001. He has pledged to fight the Taliban. Who will support Mr. Massoud in Afghanistan and abroad? India, the United States, or someone else? And is Afghanistan headed towards a civil war?
I think it's simply still too early to say or to speculate too much over these questions. All parties also outside Afghanistan are now taking kind of a wait and see approach, and then they can be more or less proactive in preparing for different developments, different scenarios. But all seem to have this wait and see approach and focus on the immediate challenge of getting citizens out of Afghanistan if they have that as an issue. So what will come after? How will the Taliban govern Afghanistan? Is it the same Taliban as in the 1990s? Have they reformed as they try to signal with the messages coming out from Mullah Abdullah Ghani Barah in Doha? He kind of saying that they are now different, they've reformed, they are more open to have women play a bigger role in society, etc., etc. But whether this is the case, it's really difficult to judge. And again, whether it's the case for all parts of Taliban in Afghanistan is also very difficult. I think we can only say now that it will be an enormous challenge to keep the Taliban together and also to ensure control over all the different parts of Afghanistan. And also because we have a different population in Afghanistan today. The 20 years under a different rule, under more free with more freedoms for all parts of Afghan society, for the women in the big cities, etc. That matters. How? That matters. But how that matters and how much pushback there will be from the Afghan society on the Taliban, this whole dynamic between a maybe reformed Taliban and a different, definitely different Afghan society. I think that's really big questions, really important questions, but I think it's too early really to say so far.
In the same context, what role will Beijing play in such a war if we're going to see a civil war?
A civil war in Afghanistan is definitely not a scenario that Beijing wants to see. If it develops, if we have a civil war in Afghanistan, I think Beijing will focus on sealing off the borders, not only the Chinese border to Afghanistan, which is rather a small border, more or less controllable, but also the border from Tajikistan. So you can't have a spillover through Tajikistan from civil war unrest in Afghanistan. What the Chinese are most concerned about is a spillover from instability in general, but specifically from different terrorist groups who could also play a role or who has certain links into Xinjiang and the Uyghurs in Xinjiang, which the Chinese are very concerned about, and where they see specifically one movement, the East Turkestan Islamic Movement, as a terrorist group. So this group, they are very concerned about. But the main concern for China is stability. So therefore, I think they will try the best they can now to play a role in preventing a civil war from developing. But whether they have a big role to play, whether the Taliban can be influenced, I think is also very difficult to say at this point.
What are China's interests in Afghanistan? Is Afghanistan an opportunity for China, or is Afghanistan simply a risk that Beijing needs to handle, as you already mentioned, because the country is neighboring China's Xinjiang province?
I think first and foremost, it's a risk to manage. So now with the US and NATO pulling out of Afghanistan, the whole uncertainty about what will now be the situation in Afghanistan, and the whole question we already talked about: how will the Taliban govern Afghanistan? Are they able to control the different parts of Afghanistan? Are they able to control if certain terrorist groups will use Afghanistan as a base? Are they able, the Taliban, to control that? Will they? Because the Chinese very early on, again specifically in a meeting in the end of July this year, the Chinese foreign minister Wang Yi, he met with a high-level delegation from the Taliban, and the main message here from China to the Taliban was that they shouldn't, if they wanted China's support, they should be very clear on not allowing terrorist groups that would have any activities over the border to China or into China to allow them to use Afghan soil. So this the Taliban agreed on. They said they would not allow that, but whether the Taliban are actually able to follow up on that agreement with China, I think we'll still have to see. So the Chinese is very focused on that. It's very focused on avoiding any kind of instability in Afghanistan spilling over into China. As I said, it can be directly over the border, but it can also be through the neighborhood, especially Tajikistan, but also some of the other neighboring countries. In this context, it's often called the three evils: terrorism, separatism, and extremism, the religious extremism. So this is often what the Chinese talk about when they talk with their Afghanistan's other neighboring countries, with Russia. They talk about these three evils, and this is clearly what they have tried to intensify the cooperation with the countries in Afghanistan's neighborhood about preventing this. And how to play a role in preventing that. Of course, now the main thing has been for China to get an agreement with the Taliban, have a dialogue with the Taliban about this. But seen from China, the roots of all of terrorism, of extremism, of separatism, of all these different groups and tension that develops in society. The main roots is poverty, is lack of development, economic development. So you could see China with time going in trying to promote economic development in Afghanistan. But I think for that, there needs to be more certainty, more stability first. The Chinese already have shown some interest in mining in Afghanistan. Afghanistan has certain strategic minerals that there would be China's interests. But it's still longer down the agenda, you could say. First of all, they need stability in order to go in and really invest in that, to put Chinese workers, Chinese companies again into the country and really develop that, because it will simply be too risky now. And they don't want to take that risk. So they want to be more certain about the development, about what the Taliban, how they will govern Afghanistan before they will start that. But if they get stability, if they get more certain deals with the Taliban, then you could see the Chinese going in gradually trying to build up something, because they also see in the long term, in order to prevent terrorist groups again coming up and be, then they need economic development, they need better infrastructure, etc., etc.
Today, Islamabad works closely with China, as Pakistan plays an essential part in the Belt and Road Initiative. Also, Islamabad has been the main sponsor of the Taliban. This also means that India, a prominent investor in Afghanistan until recently, has now left the country. This must be the perfect environment for China. India's influence has weakened, and Pakistan could help Beijing to understand the Taliban. Is that a fair interpretation?
No, I don't think it's totally fair. Again, the main priority for China is stability. There are still some question marks whether it will be a stable Afghanistan. So if the choice facing Beijing was a stable Afghanistan where India had a role to play, where the US had a role to play, where you kind of have different bigger or great powers involved, and the other choice was a very unstable Afghanistan with a Taliban that couldn't control the different parts of Afghanistan, you had terrorist groups again using Afghanistan as a base, then definitely they would choose the stable Afghanistan. So I think it's clear if they get a stable Afghanistan, if they get a deal with the Taliban and the Taliban rules Afghanistan in a way where it doesn't spill over, or not only into China, but the whole region of Central Asia, well, then, of course, they can start working, as I mentioned before, start working with infrastructure project, with mining investments, etc., etc. But we're still some distance away from that. There is still a lot of uncertainty whether that would at all be the case. But you're right that the China-Pakistan dialogue or cooperation of Afghanistan, I think, will be central. And the Chinese will also put what they have of pressure, ability to put pressure on Islamabad to work towards the same aim as China. So also use their Islamabad's link to the Afghan Taliban to pressure them to not allow any terrorist groups in Afghanistan that could direct their attention towards China, or that could generally work out of Afghanistan as well. So I think there will be an effort from China to try to unite not only Pakistan and Russia, but also some of the other Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, all the other neighboring countries, and together with one voice try to make very clear for the Taliban, if they want any kind of cooperation, if they want any kind of investment, etc., this is kind of the main condition for that.
You mentioned Russia. What is Russia's future role in Afghanistan? Do the two allies, Beijing and Moscow, have the same interests in the country?
I think Russia is very careful, very hesitant from again being involved in any way in Afghanistan. They kind of had their lesson, it didn't go very well. But you're right, they have clear interests in how Afghanistan will further develop. But I also think they, similar to China, will try to go a more multilateral way, you could say, try to mobilize the neighboring countries, maybe use the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which is a multilateral cooperation started already in the late 1990s under the Shanghai Five and then developed into the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which together with, it is a cooperation between China, Russia, and several of the Central Asian countries. Iran has also recently joined. So that you have all the neighboring countries to Afghanistan, they are somehow involved in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. And the Shanghai Cooperation Organization has a clear focus on fighting against what they call these, as I mentioned, these three evils: terrorism, separatism, and religious extremism. So try to mobilize the Shanghai Cooperation Organization to play a role in relation to the development in Afghanistan. Try to get the Taliban to engage with the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. I think that could be a way to go where you will see both Russia and China being interested. I think it's more difficult to see Russia again being directly influenced, trying to be increase their presence, trying to play a role in a security military way in Afghanistan. But again, it depends on how badly the situation in Afghanistan will develop. If it really develops into what we talked about before, like a civil war, then of course it will also be very difficult for Russia, for China, for some of the other neighboring countries to just sit and wait, right? But they're not eager to get in. Often you get the impression that China and Russia are really eager now, the US pulled out and NATO, and generally that now there's this room for other powers to come in and take advantage of the situation. I think that's a wrong interpretation. I think that's not how we see it. Neither China or Russia are eager to go in and play a big role in Afghanistan.
In many ways, Western powers' catastrophic handling of yet another crisis, this time Afghanistan, has made Beijing a more reliable partner than Washington, according to many countries in Asia and Europe. Afghanistan is a warning to Taiwan, according to Beijing. Therefore, in Asia, the fair question is who dares to bet on a long-term alliance with the United States, which would be no more robust than the outcome of the next US election.
Yeah, I think it's difficult to put it up that way. We already seen the Japanese prime minister stating that Afghanistan is Afghanistan, Japan is Japan, Asia is something different, right? So what the US went into Afghanistan was due to 9/11, right? To fight this terrorist group, to avoid terrorism again, a terrorist group again being able to attack the US, to attack the US homeland. But what we have in Asia is different. It's allies. So if the US doesn't follow through on their commitments in the different alliances there, that would really be the end of the US as the dominant power in Asia, right? And the US is not there. What we see the US now, and again, especially under the Biden administration, focusing on in their foreign security and defense policy, is to confront China, to make sure that China can't, as Biden said at one point, can really threaten the US dominance, right? So they're very clear on that it is a main focus for the US now, and a lot of analysts are also arguing that that was one of the main reasons why Biden really sticked with the decision to pull out of Afghanistan, because resources has to be focused now. And I also think he said it in one of his recent speeches, that focus now has to be directed towards dealing with the two main challenges, the two authoritarian challenges to the US, to Western democracy, which is China and Russia. So I think that it actually... it actually leaves more resources to focus on that. But then you're right, of course, will the different US allies, US partners, will they really see the US as a credible, the US commitments, the US promises to come to their aid if they need, will they really see it as credible? But on the other hand, you could say, what other alternatives do they have? It's not that they, if for example, you're Taiwan and you see a more threatening China, and if you really want to have a chance against China, then you can't look anywhere else than to the US, right? So it's also I think both that this that Afghanistan is different from these alliances that that the US has in Asia, but also that there is not that much choice, right? If you really want to, and with the US now so clearly focusing on confronting on mobilizing its allies in confronting China. I think it's difficult to draw that parallel so clearly as you put it up that it will really be the same. But you're of course right that it gives more fuel to the already from the Trump administration already growing concern about the credibility of the US. Will they really come to our aid? So therefore, of course, as we've seen for several years in Asia, US Asian partners, Asian allies will also try to build up their own military, will also try to make their own partnerships within Asia, between, for example, India and Japan, Australia, India, et cetera, et cetera. So they will also build, try to decrease their dependency on the US. So they have other partners that could come to their aid. With the US, they hope, but also if the US is not there, that there are also other ways of dealing with China, not only militarily, but also by building up political relationship, economic relationship, free trade agreements, things like that, that doesn't have China in it or the US in it, but are more intra-regional, intra-Asian. So we already see a lot of that going on in Asia, and I think this with Afghanistan will only emphasize for the regional states in Asia that is necessary in order to maneuver in this US-China growing competition. But drawing the direct parallel from Afghanistan, I think, is difficult.
In Europe, the Afghanistan exit also raises more questions than answers about the reliability of Washington. Soon, Chancellor Merkel will leave German politics, leading to a much tougher German and European stance towards China and Russia. At least this is how it looks like right now. Is it too late for the EU to draw a line in the sand when it comes to China? Have we already become too dependent on China?
Difficult question. Well, we've seen for several years now that the within the EU, but also the individual European countries, the big European countries have increasingly tried to find their own position in this US-China, increasingly US-China great power competition or rivalry, have argued for in the EU language is called finding their strategic autonomy. So finding their own position, because the European interest, whether it's the EU, the Brussels, or whether it's the individual big European countries as France and Germany, they don't see their interest totally aligned with the US, and they have they at least when we see their China strategies and also the China strategy that came from Brussels a few years back, it is more trying to find a balance. It was this from Brussels, there was this language that China was both a competitor, a partner, and a rival, a systemic rival. So they try to like say that in different policy areas we try to have a different relationship with China. There are areas where we need to cooperate to deal with global challenges. We need to cooperate with China. China will continue to be there. We need to cooperate. They have a big stake. We have strong economic interest in cooperating with China, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas the US line under Trump, but continuing under Biden, is much more confrontational. It's very, of course, now we also see the Biden people coming out and say, well, we want to cooperate with China when it's in our interest. But this is not really acceptable to China. So the US-China relationship right now seems to be in a kind of a stalemate. Nothing is really happening. And it seems that the US-China competition is only intensifying. And this really is harmful for European interests, right? They don't want to take clear sides in this, but they want to find their own position. And I'm not sure how the Afghanistan development and things will play into that. But I think it emphasized for especially the bigger European countries the need for exploring this European strategic autonomy, that there is really a need, so you don't get caught up again in a situation where the US decides to pull out of Afghanistan without much dialogue with the European partners, even within NATO, not much dialogue. They simply come and tell, we decided to do this, and expecting that they, and they can't do much else, right, that they need to follow the US. But this is a situation where we now stand also being somewhat frustrated, and the different politicians in the European countries are really under a lot of criticism domestically for the way that the whole withdrawal from Afghanistan played out, right? So there is kind of a call from the different European countries to find their own positions, exploring this strategic autonomy. But there's also, on the other side, there's also a realization that it's very difficult to do something without the US, especially if you go into conflicts or situations that require a military presence, right? Because the US is the strong military power. We've seen France trying to take the lead, for example, in Africa and the different anti-terrorist operations there. And anti-piracy, we've seen European countries try to play a leading role as well. But when it comes to bigger things, we need the US, right? US is the main military power within NATO. So it's difficult. So it also requires building up a European military, whether it's individual European countries going together, because it's difficult to see in an EU context, right? But I think all this debate has intensified, all the debate about how the US, the development in the US, and the kind of, there is a realization also in Europe that all this about American first, it will not end with Trump. It might be put in a different terms, said in a more polite way, but it's still like there's a lot of continuity from Trump to Biden. So it's still taking care of American interests first. And you could argue this has always been the case. But what is different now is that there is maybe a bigger difference on some issues between American and European interests. And on China, you could argue that this is the case, or the reading of China is different in Europe and in the US, and also the way that you want to deal with a stronger and more assertive China. How to deal with that is also, there's a lot of similarities, and I think there is also a lot of common ground, but there are also differences, and how that will play out, I think, is the really big issue for Europe, because there is really a need to find their own position in this.
Thank you, Camille Nørup Sørensen, for taking time for this podcast.
Welcome.